Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. With us today, we have Constantine Sonkin. Constantine is the CEO at iBrainTech. Constantine, welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Our pleasure. So let's start with iBrainTech. What problem is it solving in the marketplace?
It all starts with a vision. How to create AI brain performance. How to use AI technologies to augment natural intelligence. This is what I've been working on in the last two decades. I've been neuroscientist, hold PhD in computational neuroscience, and deep tech entrepreneur, hold MBA in global entrepreneurship. And my passion is to build deep scientific ventures that solve real life need of everyday lives. And if we want to be specific, and we must be specific in business, we need to solve the need where people need to use their brains better to perform more efficiently. And we found that need in sports. Where else, if not in professional elite sports, human performance is being tested to the maximum level. This is where we started. We are elite validated brain training technologies that allow people to control their movements and their decisions much more efficiently. But this is the stepping stone to democratizing the brain exercise with AI and to make it as routine and widespread as physical exercise.
So what was the inspiration behind the idea?
You know, when I started leading research in the AI domain, I was amazed that the real source of that technology is with biological organization of our own brain. Our own amazing brain gave the foundation for all that crazy tech that now is so efficiently helping us and serving us. But it was their unique processing capability of natural intelligence. And then I said, okay, machine learning and AI have been improving so rapidly. Why our natural intelligence is not growing as fast? And we even say that we use our brain for 10% and our kind of brain capabilities didn't improve that much if we compare ourselves 40,000 years ago. And I think, and that I understood, we need to give back. We need to use this AI technology to help those who are immobilized or disabled because of brain traumas. Can we rebuild this brain capacity to control movements, to make decisions, to operate in the real world scenarios? And then can we help our children to understand their natural capabilities and develop them in their professional and open box manner, not to dream about maybe you need a little bit more focus, maybe you need this skill, maybe you need that skill, but no, to see what's happening and say, according to my values, according to my objective, this is the region of the brain I want to develop, and this is how I will do it.
And how are you achieving this? How does the technology work?
So this is the big vision of the scientists, right? But if we become engineers and hands-on entrepreneurs, of course, we need to deliver more than just a vision. Though the vision and the strategy is an imperative. We can't just solve small questions. It's not captivating enough to build strong and stellar teams that will follow you as a leader to solve real big world problems. So the vision should be sound and solid, though the execution should be on par with that. And what we build is there a training system. You can say even a video game that you control your avatar in this training environment with your mind only. You wear a brain sensor cap and you visualize actions. You visualize long passes, penalty kicks, foul shots, and basketball. And your avatar executes that actions. The better you visualize that activity, the better is the performance of the avatar. And the trick here is not to control a machine. The trick here is to provide you real-time feedback on the way you activate centers in the brain responsible for control of your movement and your decision-making. So the more focused you are, the more precise are the actions of the avatar. The better you visualize and activate your motor systems, the more powerful, more efficient is the movement of the avatar. And because it happens in real time, you can learn how to activate your centers in the brain in high and high and high levels. So you can actually exercise them the same way you go to the gym and you do reps and you see your bicep grows. The same here, you can see that your regions in the brain responsible for decision-making and motor control grow over time. And you do that in the gamified and sport-specific manner.
I've got a lot of questions. Before I start asking, though, if we can take a moment, you mentioned you're in neuroscience. What was your career progression leading up to iBrain Tech?
I've been in management and business leadership since I remember myself in early 20s. And I was doing business during daytime and I was doing science during evenings and nights. Then I took a position as a R&D leader in the Center for Innovations in Neuroscience at Tel Aviv University, which is the largest university here in Israel. And then finally, I managed to unite two halves of my personality, passion to business and passion to science, in the deep tech innovation journey. The founder and CEO of iBrain Technologies is rooted in neuroscience and professional business development.
And so what was the defining moment when you decided to transition from the university to starting the company?
After seeing so many stellar research projects and great professors and PhD students focused on publishing papers and being so satisfied that their research was published and maybe read by 100 of their friends and presented at the conference, and they believed that this is it. This is the end of the journey. I can't get it. I said, guys, it's the beginning of the journey. You found something promising. You made an invention. Maybe it's worth taking the time and effort to make it innovation, to bring it to the world, to create utility out of that scientific concept. And they say, no, it's not our business. Someone else will come and use it because it's now open knowledge of the world. And the reality is that so often no one ever comes. And so many inventions just stay there in academic papers, and there is not enough courage in academic society to step out of this sterile lab environment and go to the real world, learn from there, and adjust your inventions to real world needs.
So I love it. It's inspiring. So you make the leap. And now, how many years in the iBrain Tech are you?
5 years.
All right. So take us through, you know, the journey is to getting started, you know, the lessons that you've learned along the way and that's gotten you to this point.
I would say in deep tech entrepreneurship that I define as scientifically based, businesses, there is slightly different cycle of market education and market adoption. I would say with market discovery. Very often that type of businesses need to educate the market that what they're doing is even feasible and possible, and it's not a science fiction. So it's very often you're so ahead of the curve that you need to build the processes and to look for product market fit and survive long enough until you have the right timing. Because as we know, timing in business is at least half of the success, right? You need to be in the right time. You don't necessarily need to be the first. Sometimes it helps, but sometimes it's not mandatory. And we know so many great success stories of second movers, even third movers to the market with a better timing. So this is the very important lesson I learned. You need to aim for market education, and you need to invest in your brand and your communication, and of course your validation, to have all pieces in place to educate people. And of course, you educate your innovators and your champions, not the laggards, right? Not the skeptics of the world, but rather those who are empowered by the access to the most innovative, though real solutions to real world problems, and work with them. And the first 3 years, that was exactly that. When I spoke with the top sports scientists or head coaches of national teams, they were actually very receptive, because for everyone, it is clear. Winners in sports are not the strongest, are not the fastest, not at all mentally prepared. Those win. So it's clear that success in any human activity, including professional sports, predominantly depend on the mental capacity. Though how to train that capacity is still a very big question. And solution to that is so innovative. So you need to create enough validation and enough critical mass of innovators validating your kind of solution in your journey to have that critical mass so the majority will start listening to you.
So over the course of this, did you go into the beginning of the first 3 years of having these conversations knowing that you were going to have conversations with champions to bring this to life? Or was there a moment where you realized, oh, no, this is the path. I have to focus on education, you know, before I'm focusing more time on education than on product development.
Thanks to their MBA and global entrepreneurship, we were familiar with all that concept. But you always expect things to be faster, right? And you always expect people to be more rational and less emotional, because you have evidence, you have multiple studies. But you know, it doesn't feel right. And that feeling and that emotional adoption of people, this is the real big discovery of me as a scientist, both as a scientist, as an entrepreneur. We have to be also psychologists. We have to be also communicators. We have to be also leaders. And that being the leaders, we have to be on stage and explain in very simple terms that it works. It is powerful and it is beneficial for everyone. And then slowly it builds up credibility and adoption.
So did you realize then along the way that there were going to be certain sports or athletic professionals who were gonna see the value of what you were doing more than others?
Yes, that was very much our business learning. Over the course of years, we fine-tuned specific value proposition to specific roles inside the sports organizations. And we transitioned from speaking about the value in general benefits to what job we're gonna do for you and what job you will be happy to hire us for, so you will be satisfied. So it's always very, should be very, very nuanced, specific, and to the point. People don't have time to explore the depth of science and potential. They need help right now. And you need to know where is the pain and how they feel every day.
I like the way you frame psychology and communication and, you know, effectively niche. Because, you know, I share your position. Our job is to communicate value, return, and the more myopic you can get, you know, the greater the odds of success. Because you know, if you're too broad, the messaging loses its meaning, or it's just more difficult to resonate with the audience. So that's great feedback. So where did you find the most or success, at least in years 4 and 5, with your clients?
Lately, we have really this tornado effect. I would say that more and more sports organizations and also athletes and even parents of young athletes reaching out to us because they want to train like pro, like top. We want to be like them. And because we have some super brands, some partners and customers, we leverage the power of sports, power of the sports brand, to spread the word among very big network fan base. So this is where we see us, and even in the Club World Cup, soccer Club World Cup happening now in the United States, we were part of the delegation of Juventus Football Club from Italy, and they showcased us together as an iBrain challenge, brain challenge. So everyone, every fan can experience visualizing actions and controlling avatar with their mind and competing and understanding how the pros are using that and how they can relate to that and how can it help their children and themselves compete better and to be more in control. And that is amazing. So with this power of sports, with one partner, let's say Juventus, you can reach 500 million people. 500 million people following Juventus. This is the magnitude of the impact in that domain. And I think it's amazing pathway for technologies augmenting human performance. They should be validated in top sports. And once they are, they can reach people and help people fast because of the power of the fan.
So makes great sense. Let's come back if we can to the technology. I'd love to better understand how it works. So you mentioned there's a cap, and the cap is the interface between thoughts and the avatar that's on the screen. You know, I've seen a handful of places. I've seen this technology in play. How does it work? How do thoughts make its way through the skull through sensors onto a screen?
I love this question because this is my favorite one. Let's first say what it's not.
Okay.
It's not a mind reading machine. There is no opportunity to read your thoughts. there is also no way we can extract all the complexity of the brain processes at this moment. Our brain is much more complex than all computers in the world together. Nevertheless, our brain works on electricity. When millions of neurons work together to support a specific action, there is electricity wave coming out of that region so that can be picked up with very sensitive sensors. And we use this superconductive silicon to sense electricity from the skin of your head. It goes through your hair, touches your skin, and this is how we pick up specific activity of the specific regions of the brain. We use 6 strategically placed sensors above selected regions of the brain. This is number one. Number two, it's based on visualization. Visualization activates your brain exactly the way it's activated during the real movement. So when you kick the ball, shoot the ball in real life, your brain needs to calculate the plan. And this planning takes place 1 second before the movement onset. This 1 second is a prep when you calculate all the angles, all the muscle activation. Okay? And when you visualize it, the same action, your brain does exactly the same job. The plan is identical. It's just not sent to the muscle to be executed. So if you can track how well you visualize actions and provide real-time feedback on the level of activation, you can turn it into the real brain gym. The same way you go to the gym and you exercise and you see your biceps growth, exactly the same principle. You see how your specific regions, strategic regions in the brain being activated, and you quantify their activity and growth over time, and you provide the feedback how well you're developing your brain regions responsible for decision-making and motor control.
So let me ask just to make sure I'm clear. Let's imagine I visualizing doing bench press using the iBrain tech technology. Will my chest muscles actually grow as well, or does it simply perfect the motion of doing a bench press?
Your question is a very good question, and it's very deep. And I will explain why. Every visualization should be function specific. For instance, for football/soccer, we have specific drills that are relevant for every position on the pitch. Because midfielder and striker and defender, they have different jobs, so they need to rehearse different actions. So this system allows you to rehearse execution of different types of action, either kicks or passes or long balls, etc. So allowing you to visualize thousands of actions without any risk of the injury, without any wear and tear on the body, you can accelerate skill acquisition dramatically. And the skills relevant for this position on the pitch. But also, we work with the people after injuries who can't move at all. How can't move at all? And for them, we offer more basic gym exercises. The same you mentioned, right? And then you visualize, usually it's after knee replacement or ACL reconstruction, etc., when people can't move for a long, prolonged period of time. And visualization actually helps first to overcome fear of moving again. It's called neuromuscular inhibition, and it confronts neuromuscular inhibition with visualization and allows to overcome the fear. And secondly, it actually develops the muscle strength, because when you visualize actions, your other parts of the body sense already, because it anticipates the movement onset. So it sends nutrition and increased blood flow to this region, to this muscle. So it's being fed better and develop better. And it actually contributes to the even muscle strength as well. Even though from the first, from your question, of course, it's quite paradoxical, right? If you don't move, you don't expect your muscle to grow, but it actually contributes even to the physical development. But of course, the main advantage is developing these neuromuscular pathways, creating this automatic behavior that is called usually muscle memory. But of course, muscle doesn't have any memory. Memory is in the brain. This is what we're training.
I totally understand the explanation. It makes great sense. I haven't really, never really thought about increased blood flow or nutrients being sent. And that there would have to be a physiological response to the muscles. I admit, muscular growth is outside of my knowledge base. I'd be curious to know whether or not you actually require the stress of weight or kicking a ball to complete the circuit. But it sounds like even at a minimum, you're having an impact by creating pathways for memory, muscle memory to take place.
100%. Physical exercise should be a priority. 2 hours a day, 3 hours a day. The maximum is what is recommended to your profession. The reality is that our physical body can't make endless amount of reps this in a short period of time without significantly risking being injured. That's the reality. And our mind is much more durable and it can learn much faster. It doesn't need to wait until you do thousands of kicks to acquire the skill. Even 200 taken on the pitch plus 800 off the pitch can dramatically accelerate the skill acquisition. This is what we are for, right? And never replacing time, physical exercise time playing with friends, real ball. You always have to prioritize. And I will even tell you, eyebrain exercise excites these motor areas of the brain. And even if a kid is in front of the screen, after 20 minutes of eyebrain, they're eager to go out and kick some balls because this sensation of motor excitement in the brain leads them to go and kick some balls. So we always connecting this useful gains and physical exercise in real world.
I'm going to guess that you've been asked the following question before. So as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about the movie Matrix, where they download into Neo martial arts, the ability to fly a helicopter, which is, you know, arguably a lot of muscle memory. Obviously, science fiction, but, you know, similar concepts, the ability to take pre-programmed repetitions to create memory within the body. Do you see that as this progressing to something that looks like that, where you can, instead of giving someone an avatar to practice, that you can take mapped memory and eventually start pushing it back to the brain?
Or is it philosophically? No, it's, first of all, it's a brilliant question and it's a brilliant movie. And philosophically, it's a very big question that probably our children will need to face for real. At the moment, our understanding of actual brain organization and brain dynamics is so limited that I would say it's absolutely arrogant to say that we can drill inside and write on our brain memory, let's say, anything. We're not close to that position. What we can do is to use our amazing tools, such as AI, and to put it to develop, to help us to develop natural intelligence. We don't need writing that directly to our muscle memory. Not just yet, and not in the next 10 to 20 years. Even though some companies already develop invasive neural interfaces, but that they read directly from neurons, mostly for paralyzed population. I think we have to be very clear on ethical red line. We should not and cannot write to our brain. It should be taboo until we really know what we're doing. I, as a neuroscientist, really believe in that. But we need to allow our intelligence to evolve in a professional manner. At the moment, we know all about our body. We know how to exercise. We know what to eat. We know how to sleep. We know everything, almost everything, about physical health, and almost zero about mental health. And mental health starts with brain health and brain development. We are in complete darkness. We don't know which areas of the brain are developed well, where is our strength, where is our weakness, what's our potential. And people say, if you don't manage things, then how you can really progress? But if you don't measure, if you don't see things, then for sure you can't manage them. So the first step is to create visibility. What's happening here? Second step is to help with that visibility, help to grow and exercise and develop brain performance when it's possible, using natural pathways that cannot hurt. This is our next step. And then only after they perfect that point, we can think about writing anything to the brain.
So I'm curious, from a business planning perspective, it makes good sense. Did you always know that it was going to be a progression? Obviously you have a whole host of ideas and opportunities to leverage this technology, but did you find that, you said, I have to, restrain myself and I'm going to start with sports, whether that's adults or children, and then I'm going to let this to evolve before I move on to the next opportunity?
In business, we have to be very focused on the value or on the segment where you're best in the world and can provide unprecedented, right, benefits to your clients and to your customers. Sport is very natural, and it is a business decision because of their market adoption and market need for advanced technology to win. It's very competitive. Also, it is very sophisticated. A lot of smart people there, super scientists there. So all human-related technologies must be validated there. And third, it has money, right? From the business standpoint, payable clients, and a clear roadmap to mass adoption. We do have, from sports, some more healthcare-facing applications, and we have that roadmap, that expansion of the brain enhancement technologies can be massive, right? But it started, in my opinion, should be very focused on validating both their monetary value and their scientific evidence, and only after that to expand.
Constantine, I love it. It's great to hear, you validating a theme that's reoccurred on the podcast, and that's just focus in the beginning, and then in time, as it makes sense to start to expand into different business areas. I've learned a ton. Thank you for sharing. Before we wrap up, I'd love to know, if you had an opportunity to go back, have a conversation with your younger self, what would you share?
First of all, enjoy the journey. The process is just amazing, right? You learn so much, you're becoming so wide, you can meet celebrity athletes, top scientists, top businessmen, you fly around the world. It is super intense. It is super difficult to lead the team, to raise capital, to develop value, to explain that future is possible and it's happening now. But the journey is amazing. So enjoy the journey.
I think it's great insight. I think a lot of times we get fixated on the outcome, not realizing that there is an evolution that takes place, I think personally and professionally, as we put ourselves out there, and we should embrace it. It's good.
Very well said. Thank you for the summary.
Anyone in your personal or professional life who's had a meaningful impact in your career that you'd like to take a moment to recognize for the impact they've had on your success?
Actually, very many people, and I am so fortunate to be surrounded and to be able to meet good people, good, intelligent, motivated, open-minded, and warm-hearted people. I literally think about hundreds of people who were instrumental in my journey. Those who recognized me as a valid candidate to lead research in the Center for Innovations in Neuroscience. That was not obvious. I was not definitely the best scientist in this domain. But I had that passion for applied research and making that happen in reality. So people gave me chances and believed in me, and all the team who recognized that, okay, this guy sees the future, let's join him in bringing that to reality. And we have more than 30 employees already in different countries around the world. So those are very loyal people who join us, not because of salaries, high salary or paychecks, because they literally embrace our vision and want to make an impact. And that innovators who took a chance on us in top clubs, they kind of risked their careers, right? Embracing opening doors to crazy technology that could work, but could also not create any chance. And in that big corporate organizations, many people don't want to do anything new just to keep their job secure, right? So all these people are really instrumental. And when I now jump on a call, I see that the main qualification I want to see is how honest is the person we want to work with good people. I think the relationship matters.
Well, kudos to them. And I'd say kudos to you too, because I think it's a lot easier for people to take a chance on somebody when they're authentic, they know their stuff, and they're passionate about what they're doing. Fantastic. Constantine, if there's anyone in our audience who'd like to get a hold of you or learn more about iBrainTech, how can they find you?
We have Instagram, iBrainTech, LinkedIn, and I'll be happy to connect personally, Constantine Sunkin, at LinkedIn. Feel free to reach out. Those who share the same vision of creating AI for brain performance, given a different level and opportunities to want to improve, happy to connect.
Fantastic. Constantine, thank you for your time. Genuinely appreciate it. Again, for the benefit of our audience, Constantine Sunkin, CEO at iBrainTech. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Christian.
I learned a ton. My pleasure. And again, I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder, CEO of FinStrat Management. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. Take care. Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com/podcast-guest. If you've got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.